from Big Mama's Pirate, and I'm here in Olympia, Kensington with
Slim Life.
Hello, Slim.
Hi.
Hi. Question for you: why Slim Lightfoot, and where? How did it come about?
That's a good question. The reason was I used to be in this band a few years ago called the Swamp Things, and we all decided we're gonna have sort of proper blues names. So I started sort of giving monikers to other people. So we called my harmonica player a Hurricane Boy Floyd.
Why?
Well,
I'm gonna stop and ask.
It's a hurricane, you know. The harmonica can do a good hurricane sound, you know. Our piano player, we called him Honky Pine Tops.
Hulky Pine Tops?
No, not Hulky. Honky Pine Tops.
Hulky Pine Tops.
No, Honky.
Honky!
You're getting there. Honky, because Honky being like a colloquial term for, yeah, you know, a white guy. So,
yes.
And he was a white guy playing the piano, and a lot of piano players used to be, you know, in the blues circuit were called Pine Tops. So we called him Honky Pine Tops. And then it came to me for one, and I suppose it came about. Fortunately, I was in a position to actually sort of, you know, come up with my own name, and the band sort of agreed with it because I was such a sort of like the fat controller, you know, of the band.
Okay.
And Slim being, well, because I was relatively slim then, and Lightfoot being that I had this habit, and the Lightfoot was the more important bit because I had this habit of creeping up on people without them knowing I was there. I suppose because, you know, I mean, at the time, I think I was nine and a half stone in my wet shoes.
Somewhere. Oh my God, that's light.
That is light.
I do have a question for you. Did you make a habit of sneaking up with people when they didn't know, and why?
Well, yeah, it's quite nice. I suppose it comes, you know, just something as a young kid that I had. I just liked. I was a creepy little guy.
Okay.
Do you want to continue this interview?
I'm not so sure anymore. Okay. I gotta turn this around. We spoke about this earlier and the busking, because you do a lot of busking.
Yeah.
And you don't. So why do you do so much busking in preference to other forms of live entertainment or performing?
Well, there's so many reasons, but I suppose first and foremost, it affords me the freedom to go out and play music when I like to play music, but having to deal with sort of like, you know, doing all the phone calls and going through agencies and things like this. But I think the reason why I've still kept with it, and I've been doing it for nearly 20 years of my life, is that there's an immediacy to it that I really love. Well, yeah, playing to the general public, where a lot of people come up to me and I get a lot of positive feedback 99.9% of the time. I mean, once in a blue moon, someone might go, you know, you're rubbish. That very rarely happens.
They do that to anywhere.
Oh, of course they do. But I think, you know, people don't hear blues music on the radio or on the television, not on the sort of main media channels these days. So it's something different, and they respond to it in a very positive way, and I enjoy that. So, and of course, financially it's great. It still is.
I was going to ask you how great, but we won't go into money.
No, we don't want to talk money, do we?
Money's not a good thing to talk about.
No.
So if you busk, you also obviously do bars and you do festivals, because we've had a chat. We've been talking for about an hour. Because Slim's trying to get me drunk, but he hasn't quite succeeded yet.
Mm.
What's been your favourite gig, whether busking or festival-wise or anywhere?
Favourite gig? I've had loads of busking, but that does come into the financial. But my favourite gig, I always remember a time, actually, we played a gig in Farnham.
Okay.
At the Maltings.
Which is in Surrey.
Just outside London.
About
30, 40 miles. And we were actually opening this festival at the week. It was the first day of the festival, and there was an expectant crowd. It was absolutely rammed to the room. It was rammed full of people. But we had this great sound. I mean, obviously the band were sort of quite, a lot of hypertension going on. And that helped the performance because it was a midday gig, which is normally not a good time to play the best gig. Best gigs usually because you're not, you haven't had a couple of libations, a couple of beers, you know.
Not enough either.
But this was great because the reason why, and I say to any musician, is always get on the side of the PA man. And because the PA man was testing us out, but I got very friendly with him, was talking to him about certain stuff, but he got the monitor sound beautiful. And the monitor sound was so fantastic. And that was really made it good. And it was so good that even at the end of the gig, I had sort of like two guys come up and wanted my plectrums.
They wanted my plectrums.
You know, they were obviously so impressed that they wanted to take home a memento of me.
Did you give them your plectrum?
Of course I gave them my plectrum, yeah. So I'm not a plectrum virgin anymore.
Okay. We won't go into virginity at the moment either because my mother might be listening. Do you generally give away your plectrums? Because I know this is something that
I get given a lot of plectrums, funny enough.
Really?
Yeah, people give me their plectrums.
Why?
Because they feel like, you know, it's going to a good home, I guess, you know. Someone gave me a really good bunch of like Beavis and Butthead plectrums a little while ago. It was like, okay, it was like a whole series of them with Beavis and Butthead in different guises. Well, not many different guises because they got about two expressions, haven't they, really, you know. Usually one with their mouth closed and one with their big teeth showing, you know.
Okay. Yeah. So you use Beavis and Butthead plectrums?
No, I've kept those.
Okay.
I've got them as a memento now.
Right. How did the Backbones come about? The Backbones are your band.
Mm.
So how did you get them together? How did you meet them? Yeah.
They're old buddies. I mean, the drummer, Chicken Skin Schultz.
Who? Chicken, say that again.
Chicken Skin Schultz.
Okay.
He
want to know why he's called Chicken Skin.
No. I don't even think he knows. He did come up with his own name. He was in my old band, The Swamp Things. But he's been with me for years and years, on and off. The other guy is a guy called Orlando, who's played with many blues greats.
You can drop some names if you want.
Can I?
Yeah.
Yeah, can I, like, say I'm on the scene? He's played with... He will chuckle at this, because I said blues greats. Ark. He's played with Otis Grand... the Cadillac Kings, Big Joe Louis. I like Big Joe Louis.
Big Joe's cool.
He's played with loads of people. No, he hasn't. I won't say any more names. There you go.
Okay. It's quite enough name dropping. Thanks very much. That's all that's allowed from one interview.
Yeah.
It says on your MySpace, I think it's your MySpace because I checked out both your MySpace and your website, but it says if you're brave enough, you can give me a call and book Slim Lightfoot and the Backbones. Why do you have to be brave to book the Backbones and Slim Lightfoot?
Well, gigs can get a little bit chaotic. It's usually down to me. Usually, it's down to what state of mind I am. But I'm normal. It's because a lot of people, when they see me play initially, they tend to see the sort of like the lighter side of my blues. But then when I get on stage, with a nice big, if I got a nice big PA system behind me, we can. No, it's not just that. It's probably down to that. I can change my mood of what I'm gonna do for the party, and I can end up sort of like just coming along with some sort of like sampled stuff. You know, I can actually I'll take some sort of like I've got some stuff which it's got like a preacher doing his. Preaching in the background, and I'll do this groove over the top of it, and the band will take off behind that, and you get the audience thinking, or the people who have booked me thinking, it's not what we saw originally.
This not what we're paying for.
No, it's not what we're paying for, you know.
Okay.
So I don't always go with the, you know, what was being, what has been, you know, what you see is not what you get with me sometimes. Okay. Not always.
I'm curious that you said that people see the lighter side of your music, because I have to admit, I've listened to MySpace, but it's not all light blues. I mean, there's some...
Well, that's just it, yeah. Well,
so, I don't understand why people... I don't know how people can see the light side if they've listened to your stuff.
Well, the majority of people who see me tend to see me sometimes, on the whole, the general public, when I'm out busking. So
right.
I tend to play the more the standard stuff. I do a lot of my own original material, but it's usually just me with the guitar and the stomp board. And the voice, and it doesn't have the drums and the bass stuff with it, and well, the backing really. You know, I mean, I back myself enough, but
it's not the same.
But I tend to be doing more standards, and it's stuff that people have some inkling of. But then I've got some really wicked songs that I've written. You know, I've got some naughty tunes going on in there. You know?
Yeah. We've heard a couple, we want to hear about more.
Hmm.
You do a great mix of old blues and you do your own stuff. So I have another kind of favourite question. It's kind of like, what's your favourite cover to do? And then of your own original stuff, a couple of them that are on your MySpace, they're not all original on your MySpace, are they?
Yeah, they are. Because you're not allowed to have copies on. You're not allowed to do other people's music on MySpace.
You're not allowed to
get banned.
Okay, you should listen to MySpace because they're all really shit hot original songs. So, what would be your favourite cover, and why? Obviously, and what's your favourite original song?
Favourite cover? It's a difficult one. It doesn't really come to mind really easily. My favourite cover. It's got to be probably something like, I would say, it's going to be something like Howlin' Wolf, Howling at My Darling.
Oh, I love that song. Mm. I cover that song.
Do you?
Not very well, but I love it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
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 I think it's just got a great little groove, that one. And I hardly ever play a solo on it either.
Really?
Yeah, nothing much, you know. Just
keep
the rhythm going, you know.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, because... He's got all that growl. He does growl on it a lot, and I quite like growling on songs.
Right.
Well, if you hear me howling, I call it love, my darling. Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm. Early in the morning, she make me jump and shout. Early in the morning, she makes my lights go out. Yes, I am too young to die. Well, if you hear me howling, I'm calling on my darling.
And with my own song, one that really I like playing, and funny enough, it's based on a sort of... Howlin' Wolf had a guitar player, who's still alive actually, a guy called Hubert Sumlin.
Yes.
Hubert Sumlin is just a genius. He came up with the Smokestack Lightning riff. And very few blues players know how to play that riff properly. It's got such a sort of in and out feel on it. It's just so difficult. You can get the main gist of it and the inclination of it pretty easily, but to get that feel that he had is amazing. And there's a song that I do. there's no way I can say I'm sort of it's as good as that riff, but it's basically playing on a one chord. It is playing on a groove, and it's a song called Doin' the Do, which I do. Which, funny enough, Doin' the Do that I do.
On his MySpace, go check it out.
Yeah, and it is, funny enough, based on a Howlin' Wolf song, which is called Doin' the Do, but it's a completely different track. But it has that same Smokestack Lightning sort of rolling rhythm on it. And I always notice every time I play it how people respond to it. They either, you know, they do sway to the groove or tap their foot. It just gets anybody of any generation and any denomination sort of involved in it straight away.
Cool.
And it's a very, lyrically it's not one of my better ones. I mean, it's a very basic song about a dancing girl. It's about a pole dancer, actually.
Pretty basic,
yeah.
But it's cool.
Shake, shake, do
2007, you released Alpha Male Delta Blues. Great name for an album, by the way. I love that. Then you released Blues and Twos, and are you're about to release something called Electro Blues Stomp.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's three albums in 1 year. Now I know this is not unusual, because when I went onto your website, you kind of, it seems to be normal that you have three albums in a year. That's pretty prolific. Is that usual?
I suppose because I'm playing so regularly, but and when you play regularly, you get a little bit fed up of your set, you know, so you have to keep sort of introducing new songs into your set.
Okay.
And then, so I'm always playing even at home to working out new ideas and covers, new songs. And I always have at least a dozen to 15 new tracks a year, which are coming through, be them originals or sort of, you know, old classics. So that makes me think, well, hold on, I've got another dozen, 15 tracks here. Why not record them? So off I go. Or sometimes I do re-record some old tracks, which, as we were talking about before,
yeah,
is that you get better at them. And your phrasing not just as a guitar player, but as a singer, gets better. And your lyrics change slightly on them. You know, you hone them down even more. Because blues is a living music. You know, it's not something that's written in stone. I mean, you can't. It's like when people say to me, how do you play this sort of music? You can't really learn blues music from written music. You have to feel it, yeah. So you're always, you're always regenerating it all the time. It's never the same thing. You know, you get that with every time you play live. You probably never play it the same way live twice. You know, yeah, you're probably close.
Okay. So Electric Blue Stomp, have you started recording it?
Yeah, it's about three quarters of the way through.
Okay, so it'll be ready in May. Is that right? That was a maybe.
That was a maybe.
At the moment, does Electric Blues Stomp describe your music? Is that how you would describe your music? Or if I was to put this question to you, how would you describe Slim Lightfoot's music?
Well, this is a bit of a departure for me, the Electro Stomp Blues, because it might sort of offend sort of purer blues fans out there, especially a lot of people who've known my stuff in the past. Because what it's doing is what I'm doing on this album is that I'm actually using electronic backing as well as a real band. So
okay.
it's got real drums, it's got real bass, it's got real piano, it's got real everything on it. But it also, in the mix in there, is electronic noises going on. Which I mean, it's mainly percussive stuff.
Okay.
So it's using electronic devices, but we all use electronic devices, we use amplifiers, but it's just using sequence sort of stuff. But it doesn't mean to say that it's come from the sequence initially. It's usually come from me working out a song and I'm incorporating what I call an electro sound, and I'm just trying to bring blues up to date, you know. It's an experiment. Whether it works or not is another thing. I mean, some tracks are working better than others, and I'm just giving it a go. It's there's no manifesto. It's just, you know, it's just me experimenting, because I like to, you know, I can play traditional blues till the cows come home. I can sit down on the porch with my dobro guitar with a slide in my hand and play your Sunhouse, your Robert Johnson, Tampa Red, all these sort of old great blues greats, pre-war players, and I can play that stuff. I can play your sort of later Muddy Waters, your Howlin' Wolf, whatever sort of and all the R&B guys, but I'd like to sort of see blues not become just heritage music, but also become a living, breathing modern music.
You say you're Stompboard. I begin to think maybe your best friend.
Oh yeah, I love my Stompboard.
Why you say that it's much maligned? Why is it much maligned, and why is it your best friend?
What, the Stompboard? Mm-hmm. It's not maligned.
You said it.
Where?
On your MySpace.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. Oh, that's it's maligned. I mean, that's probably been a bit too literal. It's maligned because I stamp on it all the time.
Fair enough.
The poor thing, it's just stood on all the time.
So you stamp on your best friend all the time.
I stamp on my best friend all the time. You know.
Okay.
I'm not a very good MySpace friend, am I really? Yeah. But the Stompboard. It's something that I used to when I first started playing blues, and I was doing just myself and a guitar. I've always been a Cuban heel wearer. I was then, but when I first started playing blues, and I used to just like John Lee Hooker stomp on the floor. Even if it was carpet, I would just be stomping on the floor, just try and get the rhythm. And to accompany myself. And I thought, well, I've seen John Lee Hooker and other guys do this thing, sort of where they are accompanying themselves with it, and you can hear it. I mean, that's the thing. It's, all right, you can see people tapping their foot, but you can actually hear it. What about amplifying this? So I was thinking in my head, I need to devise something which I can, put my foot on and comes out sounding like a bass drum, but without reverting to the classic old one-man band situation of having a big bass drummer for you, because there is a lot of like alternative blues around now. We've got these one-man bands, and they have got a bass drum in front of them. Guys like Bob Log, who I admire very much, he's got a great sound, and Scott Byrum. But I just didn't want to get away. I didn't want to carry a bass drum around with me, and so I just devised this. This stomp board, which is made basically out of a breadboard. It's a breadboard with some feet on it, and I've held it out in the middle, and I've stuck a little microphone inside with a metal plate on top, and I just put my foot on it, put it through a graphic equalizer for all you technical people out there.
Okay.
And it makes
I'm
it
very technical. Sorry.
I'm not saying you're not. And it just makes a great sound. It just underlies, because I play a finger picking guitar style when I'm solo, so I'm doing the bass and the lead stuff as well. But it just really underpins everything.
It's great. I have a question for you though, one of many. When I was obviously doing a little bit of research, I went and I googled Stompboards just for the fun of it, and there is a site that gives you advice on how to make a Stompboard.
I didn't know this.
Did you seek any advice when you were building your Stompboard, or is it all your own creation?
Completely my own creation. Actually, I haven't heard of that. Funny enough, that's something I haven't done. When I get home, I'm going to do that. I'm going to sort of Google it. No, I haven't actually looked into the science of it. I know that someone's told me there's a guy in Australia actually builds them or to sell.
Right.
But they're quite expensive. I mean, my one costs, I think, all total to like £20 or... If you're listening in the States, $40 forever. But my one cost, it was very cheap. I mean, I just had to buy my partner a new breadboard, that's all.
Okay.
Because she wasn't very happy with that.
A wooden breadboard?
Yeah, a wooden breadboard. Just a chopping board.
All right, so you
chop your vegetables.
Hollow out.
You just hollow it out, yeah. Well, there's many ways of doing it. I mean, you could just put a microphone on top. I mean, when I say a little piazza is a micro, contact mic. And you could tape that up on top and then just put your heel on it.
Okay.
And I would advise anybody who wants to make a Stompboard is to play it with your heel and not with the front of your foot, because you just get cramped.
Okay.
See, that's a man of experience talking to you.
That's an answer to everything.
Mm.
Being a guitar player, which you are, I have to ask you, how many guitars do you have? Because all the guitar players I know, it varies, but they generally have quite a few. So how many do you have, and why do you have so many, and what's your favourite, and tell me the story behind it.
I'm not too bad as a guitar player. I mean, I do have probably about 10.
Okay.
But the she's giving me the eyes here. She's making me feel guilty.
No, I'm not.
Why has he got all these guitars? I'm a singer. I've only got one microphone. Well,
yeah.
The reason why, but I have guitars for they do all different things. I have a mandolin. I have a cigar box guitar, which is basically like a banjo, but it's made out of a cigar box.
Why? How does that work?
Well, it's a five-string sort of guitar, but it's made with this a genuine cigar box.
Is there a picture of that in your MySpace? Is that what
yes,
I saw?
That's it. And that's going to be on my new album as well. Even though it's got electro stuff behind it, there's a cigar box playing the rhythm. And that's great. That's a great sound because it really sounds like a real authentic sort of banjo-y, dobro sort of sounding guitar. And I have a dobro, which I like to use. And then
I do have to ask you because I'm now fascinated with the cigar box guitar. Mm. How did you come across a cigar box guitar? That's one glass of wine. How did you come across it, and why would you play it? Is it the sound amazing?
It sounds incredible. I mean, I've come across it, to answer your question. I came across it when I was looking at someone on a website, and they happened to be playing one. I thought, what's that he's playing? You know, and it looks like it, I thought, God, it looks like a Bo Diddley guitar. You know, Bo Diddley's got a square guitar. And Bo Diddley, obviously, it does derive from sort of like bass players used to, or string, put a piece of copper wire or wire, you know, on the porch or from the roof or whatever, and string it across and basically tie it to a tea chest or something like that and play it. There's many forms of Bo Diddley's, but I saw it and I thought, God, that sounds great. So I sort of did a bit of. Well, here we go. We're getting technical again. We go on the website. You know, you can find all. It's so great these days because, you know, in the modern world, you can find anything. Just Google it. I searched for it. There's a guy in Canada, in Montreal, called. And I'll advertise him because he's got a love for what he does. He's called Daddy Mojo, and he does to order. He does from 3-string to 5-string, so cigar box guitars, and you can order them in many different sort of. So different types of cigar boxes. I just told him to give me any one that he, you know, is using, and I want the 5-string. I want the full Monty. I want the biggest one. They got a pickup in them, really crude pickup, and the necks on them are awful. They're absolutely a pig to play because the action on them for guitar players. I mean, they're about seriously. They are half an inch off the fretboard to start with. That's at the lower end, and then. Then they get about an inch up. And they're pretty difficult to play, but they're great for slide playing because the action is high, and they just sound really authentic when you play them. They've just got a really gritty sound, you know. But you can only if you're looking to do very fancy tricks on them, forget it.
Okay.
But to go on, I mean, I have got. So I said I got to a dobro. I've got an acoustic guitar. And I have my Stratocaster, which is my workhorse guitar, which I use for my main slide playing. On top of that, I've got a Gibson, which I use for Chicago blues playing, which I hardly ever do because I've all for you guitar players out there. Again, I mainly play in open tunings, so I tend to stick with my Stratocaster. And I've got a classical guitar as well, quite nice one.
I see you with a national, or is that just...
I don't have a national, that's something I don't have. Yeah, too expensive.
They are. I don't have one either, I just know about them. Okay, so this is what we were talking about earlier, and it's kind of like anybody, I guess, that plays blues that are outside of the US, you kind of go, so how did you get into blues and why are you playing blues and how did it all start? Yeah.
I could be here for hours about that one, but I suppose I've got to be quick.
Yeah. Well, not too quick, but you've got a little time.
I got into blues from listening probably to, like a lot of people in Britain, or listening to people like the Rolling Stones. You know, I mean, they were sold blues back to the Americans back in the 60s. They were one of the reasons why. But I was in a household where, fortunately, I had someone who was, you know, older than me and had a lot of, was into a lot of soul music as well. And you start going back, you start listening to soul music. I mean, even the real commercial stuff, the Tamla Motown stuff. But then all that Stax stuff as well. I loved all that when I was a kid. I was brought up on that. And I just loved black music from the onset. You know, it was just, I was just brought up in that environment where that sort of stuff was around me. And I mean, I'm talking when I was 4 or 5 years old and I became aware of it. And it's the groove of it. You just can't beat that groove, you know. And okay, you know, all the rock bands, I'm saying like Rolling Stones, who did blues in their early days, but then found their own sort of voice later on, and the Beatles to some extent. But then it wasn't really until I was probably in my mid to late teens that I started sort of discovering the real blues greats. And then when I got into my early 20s, I started sort of discovering the more obscure sort of blues, away from the sort of the usual culprits, who are still the best. I mean, your Muddy Waters and your Howlin' Wolf and your Robert Johnsons. And then discovering such a plethora of different styles of blues. And to me, when I first heard it, I was at the time more of a singer than a player. But I could strum a bit. And I just thought, how do they play that? You know, I'm talking about more the Delta blues. I mean, it's such a mysterious way of playing guitar. And it wasn't until I discovered the open tuning, the open tunings, that I really could sort of like get myself under the skin of it and start to really discover it for real. And that's how I got where I am now, really. For me, it was the Delta blues and discovering the open tunings that opened up a whole area.
That's what made you want to play guitar, obviously.
It really did, yeah. And hearing the slide, I mean, everybody loves that slide sound, you know. It's one of those things, like, some people like saxophone people, they love saxophones, you know, it just does something for them. But for me, it was a slide, because I was a singer, and for me, well, the saxophone's like that too, but for me, as a singer, the slide talked. You know, it had all those passing notes in it, it just like the blue notes, it slides across.
Yeah.
You know, hence being called the slide, you know, because it just does have all those in-between notes, which say like a piano can't do, you know, or there's
voice can do it.
But the voice can do it.
You got a song called Got My Best Suit On.
Oh, yeah.
Which I love. How does it make you feel wearing your best suit?
It makes you feel good. It makes you feel fine and dandy. Makes you feel like a proper man.
Okay.
That's why I wrote it, actually. It's from that premise, really. Just like, I don't wear suits. I like wearing hats and I like looking reasonably sharp, but I don't wear suits very often. We live in a day and age, it's like you look at all those great clips, you know, in the past, you know, the 50s for a start, but everybody wore suits. And all the old blues guys wore suits, you know, and they look sharp, they look good, you know. They look trim and proper, and they look like they meant business, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and whereas these days, everybody's casual, you know. But my best, I mean, I think people still get that, you know. It's like, my best suit on is just saying it's about feeling good about yourself. And it doesn't mean you have to be wearing a suit. You could be wearing your best outfit, which doesn't mean to be say it's a suit. Yeah, so, and that's what it's about, really.
Okay. I still think men in suits look really cool, by the way, so you should always wear the suit. If you were a leader of any country, it could be fictitious, it could be real, who would you be?
Cool, you put that's a tough one, isn't it? A leader of a country.
But like I said, it can be fictitious, it could be, it doesn't have to be...
It would have to be fictitious of me running it. God, it'd be a right joke. Oh, here's a man. Funny enough, I studied politics when I was a young lad at university. But favourite leaders. problem is, I'm a bit of a 20th century boy, and there are so many despots. So there's not many good people to actually sort of...
Okay, so if you were a despot, who would you be?
I wouldn't want to be a despot. Oh, no, there's been too many very despots. I don't know, really. I can't really answer that one. I don't think I there's any leader that I've really totally respected. I'm a bit cynical when it comes to politics, because not just because I've studied it. I mean, most people are generally don't sort of believe in, especially in this day and age, don't believe in politicians because it's too much of a presentation.
It's hard to.
Yeah, it's more about presentation than actually the real policies and politics. And I can't get to that one.
Okay. Well, my next question generally is, if you could lead somewhere in the world, any country in the world, where would you lead and why? So.
I want to be the leader of Jersey, where I come from, originally in Channel Islands.
Why?
Because it's my island, it's my hometown. And I just believe I could do. I could appeal to. I could give Jersey sort of like, you know, the real spirit of the blues, which it doesn't.
Cool.
It doesn't really have, because it's a very. It's one of those places which not many people know too much about. The politics of the island is very funny, because it's like they call it the States of Jersey, which in some way leads me on to why I've always felt it's got like a small town America feel about it.
Okay.
Because we even have deputies.
Okay.
Yeah, there are people like that there. Yeah, she like, you know, there goes the deputy. Hi, deputy.
Deputy dog.
Yeah. And it is a bit of, it's got a real small town, mid-America feel about it. It's not a religious place. But it, unfortunately for the island, it is run by most countries, by people who are there for the benefit of the rich, really. It's a tax haven.
Yeah, it has a lot of benefits for people that have some money, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the islanders don't really see that. So maybe I give a bit more back to the people on the islands, the working people on the island.
Jersey's Robin Hood.
Well, see, in Jersey, people think Jersey is just full of rich people. Where there is a per capita on the island, or for the population, there's quite a few millionaires. But it's just ordinary people like me who come from there, you know. Working class people.
Not so ordinary working class people, though. Mm. I have one last question for you. Well, it's not actually a question, it's a request. We're called the Pirate Pods. So most interviews, if not all, are ended by our interviewees or our conversationalists giving us their best impression of a pirate. Please. Thank you very much.
Arr, ya jimbaladic, ya scurvy bum.
Slim Lightfoot, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.